The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. That's correct. This is Steve Beauvais this evening. Wednesdays and Fridays, of course. Monday, Thursdays, and Tuesdays. Don, so Tuesday evenings and Wednesday evenings, we have our young folks helping us out. Not doing a lot more helping us out. Taking over at some point here, right? Wednesday night, my son Nathan joins me. He's our financial historian and adds an entertainment, I think, element to the program. Education and entertainment in the world of finance. That's the Money Talk motto. Again, Tuesday night, Don and his daughter, Donna Grace, unique there is that two very experienced certified financial planner professionals. Nathan is in the beginning stages of his development. All of the hosts of the program every evening are certified financial planner professionals, just our own little thing, you know, our own little hang-up, I guess. you got to believe in something, right? As I mentioned before, there are other financial, designations and things that are very worthwhile. This is just the one that we happen to choose quite a few years back. Markets were down across the board today, slightly, down 30 points, 20 points. Dow still at 21,580. My dominant note prepping for the show tonight was it's a coming, which means stock market's been positive for too long. It's a coming. August sounds like a good time for it. I'm not going to try to run away and hide from it. I'm going to make sure that we're not speculating, which means having higher ratios of stocks in your account than you have in the last 5 years. If anything, I think it should be lower, especially good old U.S. stocks, excuse me, which you all know I believe in completely and will own and have owned in my own portfolio and my clients' accounts always. It's a matter of what degree, you know. The best stock market in the world is the U.S., but the next 2 years, I believe it's going to be emerging markets. That's what's been happening so far this year. To shortcut it for you, these emerging markets, you know, they don't always emerge. And many learned professionals despise these investments. That's because they are extremely volatile and they are risky. And that's why we use them in proper dose, you know. No matter what you hear us cover here on the program, keep in mind that it's always a matter of dosage. Would you have emerging markets if you were 80 years old? Sure, but I wouldn't have a lot, you know. Would I have only emerging markets if I was young? Probably not. They're fickle. They have long periods of non-performance, you know, and then they have these surge periods. I think we're in one. Generally revolves around rising interest rates here in the U.S. That's where we are now. Although no one is really expecting, you know, rates to rise at an alarming rate. Thank you, by the way, to the station for the nice time we had down at the waterfront. Nice, thoughtful thing to do. A few of the folks I was talking to were telling me some of their children, you know, next generation, buying houses now. Interest rates are going to go up, and so locking in a long-term mortgage now, and I would try to do a 15-year. I would recommend in this category you all follow the Dave Ramsey principle. 15-year mortgage if you can, and have a payment that's no more than 25% of your pay, not 30 or 33%. Starting off life that tight can create other issues or other problems, I would think it could anyway. So a good way to start off your financial life in a balanced way rather than a, you know, up-to-your-eyebrows way. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Check out our podcasts at 790business.com. Hey, this program is about entertainment and education in the area of personal finance. Tune in every evening at 5 p.m. We have a variety of hosts and thoughts. We have some guests coming up to talk about taxes. There's this little thing I've been having fun with for a while now, and you probably have all heard me say it quite maybe tired of hearing about it, right? Topic 409, like the spray cleaner. I'm 58 years old. When I was a kid, Mom had, that was it. That was the cleaner you used, 409. It's an IRS code, and it addresses how long-term capital gains are taxed, and they're taxed at a special discounted rate for not the wealthy. It's the opposite, and this is one of those tax laws that are pretty rare. Usually these kind of, you know, stock tax things are usually designed to motivate and bring in the wealthier a dollar. People in the higher tax brackets get phased out of these, and they don't get to enjoy these breaks I'm talking about. But people in the up to about $75,000 of adjusted gross income, a couple, can enjoy some of these tax advantages. Leads me to topic number three for the night. I believe now, and it's taken me 36 years to come to this conclusion, so maybe you ought to listen to this one. The best type of retirement plan is all three. I have pre-tax, I have Roth, and I have after-tax money that I plan to be there for my retirement. That way there, when it comes to my retirement time and I need to make withdrawals on my assets, I can be very, very strategic. Meaning, if I'm in a high bracket that year for whatever reason, or taxes are higher, new leadership in Washington, I can use my Roth money. Tax-free, baby. So if that year I retire, taxes are very, very high, guess what? Not for me, because I have some Roth. Use your Roth until the tax rates go down. Wow. How about long-term capital gains and special dividends as well? There's a law in our country. It's called a domestic dividend rule. I probably haven't got that exactly right, but our CPA friends can will know that better. What it just says is if you're an American, and I am, and many of you are, I'm sure, you can invest in American companies, like stocks, you know, or mutual funds that invest in those stocks, American companies that pay dividends, and you'll get a nice tax break on the dividend as an incentive for you to take the risk. These type of laws are usually there for a reason, and they're societal. We, at least in the past, have believed that that's a healthy thing to have, to make it make a little reward for people to take risk. If people don't take risk, good old America wouldn't be the great country that it is, and many other great countries that people have to take risks. So it's nice that you have choices. Those of you that don't like risk, I understand. Don't feel badly about it. That's how you feel about these things is all that matters. Don't ever feel badly. If you are working with someone who makes you feel badly about that, I've had a few of those. They were ladies that were on their own, single ladies, and they came in my office, and that's what they told me. They told me that they didn't want to be as aggressive as they were kind of being prodded to be, and they really didn't feel that the people they worked with created an environment. These are very subtle personalities, you know. Didn't create an environment where they felt they could really say what they felt. It made them feel embarrassed to say, well, I'm afraid, or, you know, maybe I'd be happy with 3% because I'm nervous about this stuff. So it's important that you have someone to talk to about these things. I'll be happy to play that role for you if you'd like. But if you hopefully have someone you work with and knows your facts, you know, all of your financial facts, which is very important to make a final diagnosis. That's why all of programs like this always have that disclaimer in the middle. It says, don't listen to anything this guy says. What it means is don't take it literally or directly. Mix it up in your soup, right, and decide for yourself. One of the wisest things I ever heard a person say was a gentleman speaker, and he said he mentioned that he read this book, and it was a very, very good book on business and how to be successful. And a few years later, he ran into a young man who was at his seminar, and he told him, he said, I read the book. Should I do it? And the great wise man said, no, read 5 books and make up your own mind. And I thought, all advice is good, folks, because you don't have to take any of it. You know, just mix it up with your own filters and your own methodology, if you will. But it's a complicated world out there, and I think we all need to humble ourselves, especially on this topic or topics like this that are very, very complicated. I find health insurance confusing as heck, yet I don't find income taxes confusing, which is odd, huh? I have that crazy left brain minority, I think, brain thing going on. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talking business. Steve Bove on Wednesdays and Fridays. Thursdays, Don Soa. Monday and Tuesdays, also Don Soa. I guess we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. We're talking about money tonight, your money if you like. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. If you get into the podcast library, check out Wednesday nights. I think it's Wednesday and Tuesday nights are special. We have our younger team members on with us. And very interesting. I think the Nathan's history flair is great. And Donna's youthful approach to things, you know, along next door her dad, who's my level of experience, and then some. Just a good blend, you know. I think we as we get older, advisors, we change just like you do. And I become, and have become already, clearly, less comfortable with risk than I was 25 years ago. So, therefore, if you're a person who wants to really take a whole lot of risk, I'm not the right guy to do that for you, I don't think. I think you need somebody younger who's in that mindset, you know, in a similar mode, in other words, right? So I think if you are doing an IRA rollover or something and you're 30 or 40, I would think it'd be best if you could find someone close to your own age, but not with a year of experience, or at least in a firm that's well-known with lots of experience, like ours. I think a rookie is fine in a great established environment. A rookie completely on his or her own, I think, should be left to incubate for about 10 years before you were to engage someone of that nature. This is the Money Talk Show. We're talking about returns a little bit tonight. There's something called accelerating returns. Now, I'm sure this isn't the case, but this is something I've noticed. I'm very nerdy. I spend a lot of time studying charts, more than most of my colleagues do. And then I spend less time reading text, so that creates a little bit of a blind spot, I guess. But I believe in charts. So they don't lie. They don't exaggerate. They don't give me sales pitches. Charts are just a manifestation of facts. And I like that. It suits my kind of brain well, you know. Accelerating returns are when, in the stock world, when you see an investment that has the 5-year average annual return, let's say, is 12% per year. And then you look in the 3-year return is even higher. You know, it's 15% per year. And then the 1-year return is even higher again. From the 5-year to the 3-year to the 1-year, the number keeps getting bigger. That's the most dangerous pattern I've ever seen in the stock world. Accelerating returns lead to a hole. And if you ever took a chart out and wrote underneath the chart the calendar year returns, when you look at a year on a chart, you may say, oh, it went up pretty good that year. But you don't know whether it's 17% or 26. But if below the chart you had the numbers there, plus 10, plus 20, plus 11, minus 5, you know, whatever happened that year, it would be obvious to you, it would jump out to you. That's how I learned it, by overlapping charts. Before we could compare everything in the world on the computer, this is 25 years ago, we printed them and overlaid them and created comparisons that way, where obviously today it can be done in a much simpler way. But beware accelerating returns. This may strike you when you're living in California 20 years from now. You remember that guy in Rhode Island that said, beware accelerating returns. Again, accelerating returns are one when you look at a portfolio, a stock, or a mutual fund, and the 5-year return is X, the 3-year return is higher, and the 1-year return is higher again. That's on a chart. That's like the wave on the perfect storm. It's steep, right? And that's where markets crack from and break down. Markets don't fall from troughs, you know. The markets are considered to work in, like the ocean does, peaks and troughs. Well, where do markets fall from? Peaks. No, there's no discussion there. There's no argument, right? They fall from high places. Well, we're at kind of a high place right now. I don't think the markets are crazy overvalued or anything like that. But I would not speculate, meaning I would not make a short-term investment in the U.S. stock market right now with a short-term horizon, is what speculation is in general. Taxes are important. A lot of things we hear in that area are wrong, you know, and I was guilty myself for a while early in my career because I was trained incorrectly, and this is something we need to work on professionally. I mean, I may think I'm a little kooky when I tell you this one. But anyway, every single thing that all of you say is tax deductible is not. It's income deductible. It's very different. Deducting something from your taxes is very different than deducting it from your income. deducted from your taxes. That's called a tax credit. If you take someone out for lunch and you can tax deduct it because it's business, you know, or mileage on your car, that's not, we all have said for years it's tax deductible, but it's not at all. It is income deductible. IRAs and 403Bs have been called tax shelters. Very common to say it's a tax sheltered plan. No, it's not. Tax shelter means you never pay the tax. That's what it means to a seasoned financial person like me. 401Ks, IRAs, Roth IRAs are tax-free. Interesting. But tax sheltered would be something where you're getting credits to alter, to be offset something else in general. And tax deductible, of course, as I mentioned, is rare. And very few of you ever deduct anything from your taxes. That's called a tax credit. You know the thing you get when you buy an energy-efficient new refrigerator? That's a tax credit. That comes off your taxes. But everything else that we talk about does it. It comes off your income. I'm sure my CPA friends out there are laughing right now, saying he's right, you know, because it's true. And it's not a real big issue. But I think in the beginning, if you're trying to learn how all this stuff works and it's overwhelming to you, then kind of those kind of misuse of words, I don't think are helpful at all to those that are learning it in the beginning. I think once you understand it all and you hear that, you go, okay, that's cute, I get it. But it really is true. I think in the beginning, when people think it's tax deductible, that means they think a $10 tax deduction saves them $10, and it does not. A $10 deduction that you and I would take would be off our income, and whatever our bracket is. For most of us, it might be 20-25%. So when you get that wrong and you say tax deductible when it really is income deductible, you are overstating the tax implications by about 300 or 400%. It's really quite a difference between being tax deductible or being income deductible. So be careful not to mix that stuff up. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, where we're here for entertainment and education in the financial arena. This one note I wrote at the top of my pad tonight, it's a coming. Just means eventually it happens, you know, and I'm not in this mode all the time. You all know that. I'm very optimistic. But at some point, it doesn't mean we don't own stocks. It just means now's a good time, I think, to be careful and moderate right now. If we get a correction, which we normally would get around August to September in a cycle like this, GDP is not looking good to grow. That's really necessary for the stock market to really hum along nicely, you know. Hey, if you're self-employed, there are some things you can do. I'm going to give you a little primer here before the bottom of the hour break. A lot of people have self-employment income that's secondary to their primary income, which is W-2. You know, you might be a coach part-time, and you may get a 1099 for that. Matter of fact, you likely would. Where your traditional day job, it will normally be W-2 that you'll receive for your taxes. But whatever income you may have, that's 1099. Very few people are aware of the amazing things. What a nerd I am, huh? It's the amazing things you can do with that. How about this? You're in your 50s, like my age right now, and you're doing a little part-time work trying to save up for retirement or something, right? And you made, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in your regular job, but you did a little part-time something. You made three. You know, you made $6,000. There's a thing called a solo 401k plan that costs like $10 to open and operate per year. There's only a handful of small investment companies that have it. I believe Vanguard and Pioneer are two of them, or Invesco, and there may be others. Pardon me if I left anyone out. Don't be offended. You can put up to like $24,000 a year away into one of these plans and take it or deduct it off your income. So, for example, a solo 401k plan would allow an earner with 1099 income of up to about $24,000 to defer it all. Just don't take it. Put it in that plan. And at the end of the year, you don't have to pay any taxes at all. Now, eventually, when you withdraw the money, you will, maybe at a lower bracket. Let's say you know your income is going to go from 80 to 30. That's not that uncommon in retirement. Because most people, if they're debt-free, a single person, you know, 30 to 50, a couple, 50 to 70, seems to be the New England average that we've bumped into most of the time. Not to confuse things, but there are all sorts of other tax words, like tax-exempt. I want to plant that seed. We'll make sure that we talk about that when we return. I would always recommend most people, if you're unsure, to seek out a good CPA for your taxes. I am happy and proud to say that I've always been a very big believer. 38 years certified financial planner, and I would not do my own taxes. It's not that I'm not capable. Number one, I don't like doing it. It's very analytical. I like the creative side of things. And I really do always feel there's an advantage to me to have that objective viewpoint of things. And I've always had it, and I do believe it's a very good value. So my CPA friends out there always like me because I'm a big supporter of them in general. Now, I do know a lot of younger people who do their own taxes. If your life is very simple with the advancement in technology today and you're kind of nerdy yourself, I get it. You can probably do an okay job that way. But I wouldn't do it if you're running a business or had any sort of complications whatsoever. I think there's just a lot that you could miss, and we don't want you to pay any more in taxes than you legally have to. This is the Money Talk Show, and we'll be right back.
With Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Yeah. That's funny. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. That wasn't me. I didn't say that yet. I'm not that cool. Accelerating returns. I know this sounds awfully nerdy. I've never heard it anywhere. I'm not going to get on here and claim that I've thought of this. However, I noticed it in my career. I didn't hear it anywhere or read it anywhere or was taught it anywhere. I noticed it by studying charts and things for thousands of hours. So beware accelerating returns. They usually means you're at the end of a cycle, and it's a dangerous point of entry, usually. You don't have to buy a product when you retire. So maybe it's the right thing for you, but you don't have to. You can take a pile of money, either an IRA or cash money. If you can get 6% return, that's kind of moderate. I think that's doable over time. If you can get 6% return and take out 10% per year, the money will last, 12 to 15 years. If you began that process at age 65, that takes you to age 77, past life expectancy for males and approaching life expectancy for females. Locking in like annuities and things now, because interest rates are historically very low, I'm not a big fan of. I, as you've heard me talk many times, an immediate annuity is okay. A fixed annuity is okay to me. Don't like the other ones at all. Very soon, if not already, have been outlawed in IRA accounts. I love that. Sorry, give me a minute. I'm all emotional here. I'm crying. I'm so happy. Annuities are going to be against the law. In retirement accounts by the end of this year, and I believe that's a good idea. Not because anyone who's recommended it in the past is automatically wrong or anything. It's just that it leaves a window open for a lot of bad things to go on, and only the bad step through that window, and that's not the majority of people in the field. So, again, just like people are not the problem in the pensions, in general, people are not the problem in the financial business. It's this law that allows certain things, and human nature seems to creep in and cause problems, so that's why we are in the fiduciary mode. Fiduciary mode means that any financial person given financial advice, and I also believe that everyone that opens their mouth about financial matters is giving financial advice. There are people in this financial world who want to get the accolades and the credit of being an advisor, but push comes to shove, they're a product salesperson, and would say, I don't give advice. We're not giving advice. We're just selling products. I don't buy that. I think financial items is just like medicine and pills should not be able to be sold by just anyone. They should only be prescribed by a professional with training. And I absolutely believe in the financial world that's true as well. However, there are people who can diagnose their own health condition because they have doctors in the family, have a natural interest in it themselves. They read about it a lot. Who knows what, right? And there are people in the financial world too, but in general, it's best to seek professional help on items that are such an importance, you know. Hey, year-to-date, these emerging markets are up about 19%. The S&P 500 is up about 9%, so it's about half. It's looking just like 04 to 06, folks. And I've been pounding on this one for a year and a half now. And I ran into somebody a week ago out for lunch, and they said, hey, you still think I should get that emerging markets in my account? I said, yeah. A year and a half ago, I wanted you to do it, you know? Not now. I wouldn't avoid it now, but I would buy less of it now. I would have put your account at 20% if you have a long-term account a year and a half ago when we talked about it. Now, probably 10. Prices, it's not on sale anymore, you know? Hey, this is your station for talking business, AM 790, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Check out our podcast also, 790business.com. When it comes to accounts like a pre-tax account I mentioned, 401k, IRA, 403b, these are accounts that let you put money in and income deduct the contributions. Everyone says it's tax deductible. It's not. It's income deductible. But they allow you to get a break now, right? So those type of plans give you an advantage today because they affect your income tax return this year. It lowers the taxes that you'll owe, okay? So it reduces your income, and therefore you owe less taxes. Now when you start comparing, you know, the option of a regular IRA, traditional deductible IRA, to a Roth, or, you know, I'm open to a remember, all these accounts, folks, are the taxes are deferred. You're going to pay the tax just later. It's not like these accounts get you out of paying the tax. Sometime during your lifetime or after you die, the tax will be paid. So don't overvalue it, you know. Don't be afraid to keep money on the side, cash money, and own some tax-free bonds like I do and get 3% tax-free. I have some other funds I own that pay nice dividends that I don't get a tax break on because my income is a little higher these days, fortunately, after 40 years. But many, many, many folks in our population in the middle income ranges and younger folks and families and retirees as well often fit into that category can take advantage of these special tax rates for domestic dividends and long-term capital gains. But it depends on where you want the break. You know, if you compare a Roth IRA to a regular IRA, I would say if you're on the younger side, under 40, it's kind of a toss-up. After 40, I think doing them all is the best idea. You know, max out your 401k with a match, max out the Roths. A couple can do $1,000 a month. If you have the cash flow, and often you will at that age, you know, age 55 to 65, the majority of all people's savings for retirement occurs in the last 10 years of their working career, folks, the vast majority of it. If you are younger than that and you've got to jump on it, good for you. It'll just make the journey easier, you know. The sooner you start any big task to chip away at it, the easier it'll be in the total impact on you. But it's something that has to be done. If you're a lot younger than I am, 20 or 30 years old, and good for listening, the odds of you having a pension, even in traditional jobs, I can't imagine that there's even a pension left sometime down the road, even in the teacher field. That's the predominant place we see it, you know. Again, nothing to do with teachers. Pensions don't work well in the modern world, I don't think, you know. And I even think they'd be better off with a 401k with a match. And then when all of those folks get to their retirement, they can sit down with a financial professional like myself, and they would tell them all about an amazing thing called an immediate annuity that you could always do. It just gives you a guaranteed life income. You give up a pile of money. You write them a big fat check. You know, $100,000 gives me $700 a month guaranteed as long as I live. As long as I'm alive, they have to pay me. That's what a pension is. You can do that with an immediate annuity because they just calculate life expectancies and they play the odds. You know, the people who live a lot longer really went out on those type of plans, and the people who live shorter don't. But the feeling of the guaranteed life income is what's comforting, I think, to those that pursue that, you know. But again, in the financial world, keep in mind all things are not created equal. I've had the last 2 years regular conversations on the phone and in the office during review meetings about bonds in the account. When I say, well, this 40% of your account is bonds, when I'm discussing the risk level, that's why the account has half the risk of the stock market. And people often say to me, hey, I heard when interest rates rise, you don't want to own bonds. Oh, that's a fun one. Well, no, there's certain kinds of bonds you don't want to own, and they're the very, very long-term ones. And what happens is it's a bit of a trap right now because those are going to pay very nice dividends. As example, a U.S. Treasury bond, 30 years, what is it, 4.25? 3.75 to 4.25? Don't dabble in that area too much myself. I'm close, I'm sure. Very alluring right now, right? 4%, U.S. government guaranteed. But you own that bond when rates rise significantly, and on paper, you could see decline in your statement. It could really get you emotional, especially if you're that type to do that, you know. I have this conversation in my office very, very often, more so than here on the radio program. And I just say to people that are either younger at investing or in the middle of their journey that I have dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens. I'm not exaggerating. I could probably come up with a couple of hundred clients I've had for 20 years that would, I could put them all in a room and would say to all, have any of you ever lost money investing? Not one hand would go up. It does not mean that along the journey, we didn't buy an investment that at some point in the future was lower in value than where we purchased it, but we did not react incorrectly, we did not sell it low, and we did not lose. So there are people who have a record, and there are many of them. It's got 75% to do with them understanding how the process works, and 25%, I believe, good coaching. But you have to have the mindset. There are people that you can't teach this to. I've tried. And sooner or later, they will do the wrong thing. The emotion will get to them. Some people can separate money and emotion. I always was able to do it. Very few people can do it. They get caught up in it. They use it as a measure of who they are. You know, it's based on how they spend money on cars and clothes, imagery kind of stuff, you know. Tends to be that way. Now, if you're the person who makes a whole bunch of dough, but you drive a 10-year-old car, you're almost always going to be the person who does not react incorrectly to the money. If you're the person who has a lot of debt, a lot of flash, drive new cars, that tends to be the person who will fall into that category of being a little more emotional about things, you know. And we like people like that. They're fun, right? And they're fun to love, I think, too. But that can be a problem for you. So if you need help in this area, you need to just get around people who can help in the area of the psychological part of investing. We've said for many years on the Money Talk program here that it's got more to do with emotional management, really, than it does money management. Are any of you surprised to hear that year-to-date right now, you hear about the S&P 500 under this new president, right? Not a politician, first businessman president ever. Everyone was expecting the stock market to go, go, go. And I do believe it's up a bit more than it would have been without that going on. So I'm with you there. But the bigger undercurrent that's been going on is the foreign markets. And Europe-type markets are up 15%, which is quite a bit above U.S. so far. And emerging markets up 20%. Well, it's probably the best category in existence right now, other than some real speculative smaller categories. Emerging markets are just a part of the world that aren't fully developed yet. How do you identify fully developed nations? By their societal patterns, by their tax rates, by their birth rates. Emerging markets tend to have very high birth rates. I was fortunate to visit Guatemala for sport fishing last December. And from looking around, talking around with people that work there in the resort area, I noticed that they still have very, very large families. And many of those folks do that because that's their belief system for life, to have a whole bunch of children, to make sure the human race continues. And that's a good thing, But not in a modern world now, that really has large financial impacts. So if you are interested, study this. You'll be quite amazed, I think, to find that the inflation rates in countries around the world correlate directly with birth rates, which means countries like America that have moderate to lower birth rates, one and a half to two and a half is moderate today, I think, per couple. They have this equal inflation rate. They tend to go together. The high inflation tends to be in emerging markets. These aren't really roaring economies. They're economies that still have a lot of problems. Need to educate their people a little more to become developed. And so they're very volatile, and they go up and down a lot, and they can be risky. I would stay away from them as a single and standalone investment. I think they belong as part of a soup, because if watched all alone, they're pretty volatile, and they can cause a bit of a acid stomach, I guess. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business, and we'll be right back. Money, that's my job here on the Money Talk Show. What's low? That's again, yeah. Real estate is not really roaring right now. Some of the real estate that I watch and own pays a nice dividend, 4 or 5%. Share prices about level for the year, no growth really. That's probably a temporary reaction to rising interest rates. Commercial real estate tends to go up in value in rentals when rates rise because leases are based on competitive rates to purchase, you know. The demand on rentals goes down when a house is cheaper. Remember we had that period of time there where everyone said, "Guy, you know what? You look closely at this thing. You know, you're paying all this rent. It's almost as cheap to own a house. At least you own something." We all heard that, right? And that's part of the cycle that we're in at that moment, and it's true. In the long run, most people, good idea, have a couple of clients. I met with one recently, been with me 25 years plus, 70 years old, 70 to 80 years old, and have been renting for a while. I think there are times in your life when renting's fine. And I think if you're not handy or not that physical, then I don't think there's much of a choice, you know. So, and I've had a few high-revving professionals, I'll call them, along the way. They were single people that weren't married. And they had beautiful apartments here in town. They traveled on business. I got calls from all over the country, you know. And they said, "I don't think I'll ever own." And they said, "I know that's against your basic principles." I said, "Well, that's what basic principles are. They're general, you know. For someone like the people I'm thinking of, their life financially worked out just fine, and they never wanted to own. I have a nice home in Smithfield, and it's worth a good amount of money, more than we paid for it. But if we look at what we actually spent on it in renovations and stuff over the years and all the property taxes that we paid and, you know, the amount that we paid out over and above had we been renting, I'll bet you there's no gain. Although it looks like there's a pretty good gain. I bet you there isn't. If you add it all up, I know there is, as a matter of fact. What did I heard somebody say, houses suck money, like a vacuum. They do. The main reason to own a home and the main reason I always did and glad that I did was family. Quiet yard, a private yard maybe, to have a little privacy. You know, that's nice stuff when you have children and stuff. So I think home is where the heart is, and that's why you should buy a house first and foremost if you're going to live in it, because you're going to be happy there. And if you can make it a good financial decision as well, well, hey, you know, we're all for that. Rising interest rates, when that happens, especially in the bond area that I talked about earlier in the show, this is a good one. Write this one down. Things that respond first respond the least. When rates are rising in the bond area, there's many different kinds of bonds, maybe 15 to 20 different categories. The ones that respond first will respond the least overall and suffer the least damage. And that was a year and a half ago, floating rate bonds and short duration bonds, my favorite type to have right now. They had their own little blip, their own little fit. But the other guys, when the interest rate cycle is over, say 3 years from now, if they continue to rise, can be significant losses on paper in the long bond department. So short duration bonds and floating rate, still my favorite category for the bond department in my own account. Oftentimes when I'm on the break, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, what else can we offer that's unique and different? And we've been here quite a while. It's really what we seek to do, to be of value to you all. I see some of these ads on the internet. I get a little riled by it. I feel bad for you all. I see things like annuity return 6%. It's not return, it's payout. Part of that payment on that annuity payment is your own money, your own principal. They should not be allowed to refer to that as return. That's misleading. It's your own money. You know what I'm saying? If you give one of these immediate annuities that I say are not a terrible idea, but the way they're marketed is misleading. If you're going to put in $100,000 and get out $500 a month, that's 6%. Okay, but it's not 6% on your money, and your money's always there. It's a payout, which is probably right now 2% interest, is 4% your own money. If you don't believe me, buy one of these things with cash money and then see how taxable it is. If it was all interest, it would all be taxable at the end of the year, and it won't be. A very small portion of it will be. So if you get involved in any of those things, just make sure you understand these are tricky words. We're trying to force the tricky out of the financial business for you. But be careful of the comparison of annuity payout versus return. I had a representative try to get an appointment with me and have me recommend to my clients one of these products. And on the telephone, I said to him, "What's the return?" And he said, 6%. I said, "That's impossible." I had to remind him he's talking to a financial expert, not a nitwit. And he five times he said 6%. And I had to press him harder, and he finally said, "Oh, you mean the internal return? Oh, it's 2. I said, and the other four is what? The client's principal, right? He said, right. I said to him, you got to stop talking about it that way. It's misleading, and it just adds to the overall smoke cloud of why people don't trust the financial business. Very important, and very important to be ethical in your word selection. So if you work in the marketing area in the financial business, please stop some of the crazy stuff we see. Please stop referring to a payout as a return in the annuity world. I saw another one that said how to generate, how some seniors generate safe income in retirement by trading options. Trading options is the most aggressive thing on the earth you could ever do. Not to someone who's professionally trained, I understand, but to average people. And to see an ad referring to it that way to you all, it just really bothers me. So if you're winging it yourself, be very careful. There are a lot of gray in the financial biz where the type of things I'm sharing with you, they're not automatically going to hurt you. If you understand it completely, thoroughly, and honestly, and you still like it, and you want to put some of your money in it, then it's probably fine. You know, what we don't want to have happen, and it happens too often, especially in the product arena, where people don't know what they bought, don't know what they were sold. We have a minute left. One of my favorite terrible stories. One of my favorite clients I met had been sold annuities for their IRA account and wasn't explained to them that there was a surrender penalty. At age 65, they had to leave the money in for 9 years till age 74. Now, they could take income out, little sneaky little definitions, but what if they weren't happy with the people handling the money in year three and they want to take all the money out and hire somebody else? Well, guess what? $40,000 penalty, even if the reason you want to leave is because of their behavior. So my advice has always been, folks, do not lock up your money in anything. It's a bad sign. When you get to retirement, a reasonable portion of annuities may be appropriate, but I would not go above 25%. I do know some other professionals that I respect very much and just might not agree exactly on, you know, with this one. That would go as high as half of your assets in retirement for annuities, but I will be at zero, and anyone who takes my advice will probably be there most of the time. But again, there are always exceptions to the rule. The more conservative you are, the more they seem appropriate, and the less you're concerned about your estate. If you don't have a family or you were single and don't have children to leave the money behind to principal, then some of these annuity programs can be interesting for you. Have a good, safe weekend, and tune in Monday night for Don Sowa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Working for the public radio.